Thank you. CIO 12. Oh, sorry, sorry, can you copy it without, print it without the pictures? I'm sorry. Mine is prettier than yours.
But if you have a laptop, there is another one, which is in color.
Thank you, Jack. I think everyone has a presentation in one way or another in front of them. So with the presentation, I also provided a matrix that gives responses. There's also a matrix that provides more in detail responses. But the number one, I think time-wise, at some point it becomes too much information at once. So that is also the why I thought the matrix is a good way to assist members with those responses and what I'm saying. So my presentation, I'll just speak to those high level points that I think are very important for members to know about. So I'll start slide 3. And from the working paper was a comment about the good draft of the legislation. And I can maybe just say that some constraints when a comment comes on the good drafting, it relates on two levels. When the bills were introduced originally, there was a lot of criticism against the drafting. There was terminology that wasn't correctly used, there were some drafting conventions, problems, etc. So that relates to a drafting problem, and that has been resolved. There were levels of panels of experts brought in, the bills were redrafted. So in that sense, terminology usage, drafting conventions, the bills are, I won't say perfect, because you can never say perfect, but really as good, close to perfect as possible. But sometimes there's a concern about poor drafting, speaking about how things gel together and whether the policy is what the submitter wants there. And that of course the policy direction, the department will speak to that, and some of the challenges specifically on whether something is worded well or worded in a way that the problems would like to see it, that I'll address specifically as we go. On slide 4, speaking to the lack of public participation, I can confirm to the committee, I've been part of this process from the 5th Parliament. There has been extensive public consultation on this matter. The President referred the bills back in respect of not sufficient public participation on fair use. My advice to the committee in portfolio, portfolio committee was in fact that there was more than sufficient consultation on that. I could show where those clauses were advertised again. So there has definitely been sufficient consultation. Even so, the portfolio committee decided to err on the side of caution and re-advertise. So there has been more than sufficient public participation. Even in this House now, the 6th Parliament, this committee did a process for public participation. The provinces did public participation. So in my submission is that there has been sufficient public participation. On slide 5, speaking to the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, I've spoken to this before, and the department will also speak a bit more to this in their presentation. But what I can just confirm to members again is that the IP Laws Amendment Act is a statute that is on the statute book of South Africa. We cannot ignore it. So when we draft, it becomes a very difficult exercise, because even though it is not operational, we must keep it in mind. For instance, if we have, in one of our offences clauses, we provide a defence, refer to a specific section. Now, if we ignore the IP Laws Amendment Act, our section will change. Our section number will change to one that is currently actually reflected in the IP Laws Amendment Act. If that then becomes operational, suddenly our defense will be referring to two sections that deal with very different topics. So that is why it is very important to keep that act in mind when we draft. We cannot ignore it. We must keep it in mind. Whether it's the operationality of it, that is something I think that is more an oversight matter, and in fact I'll speak to that I think towards the end when it comes to the commencement clause, because I think there was something triggered by the lack of this act being made operational that resulted in the proposal from Gauteng on the commencement of this specific amendment, but I'll speak to that later. On slide 6, Just to indicate on the constitutionality of the bill, the Northern Cape indicated that the bill should be subject to the limitations as stipulated in the Constitution. Now, first of all, the Constitution is always applicable. We cannot oust it in legislation. If we oust it in legislation or try to go above it, it becomes automatically unconstitutional. So anything that we do, our office is always on the lookout for anything that might go against the Constitution, and then we will advise the committee of this. I'll speak a little bit more about the interaction between Section 25 and Section 36 in a subsequent slide, but specifically we cannot oust it, and my submission to this committee is that the rules in fact do not oust the Constitution or the Chapter 2 rights and limitations rules. What I will speak to, Section 22 speaks about trade, other professions and occupation, and 25 speaks to property. But specifically, property has its own limitation to it. So that's why I now specifically mentioned I will talk to the difference between 36 and 25 in the second principle. Yes, Section 22. Yes, I will introduce you to that as well. I'm then moving on to slide 8. And I'm now going to speak to everything clause by clause. And so specifically, clause 1 deals with definitions. The first proposal there was from Housing in respect of accessible format copies. And the proposal was that the court's definition must be retained in the bill. The definition that we have in the bill at the moment is the same as that of the court, except for two issues. The one is that the bill's definition, the copyright bill's definition, has a broader application. The court was limited to visual impairment, blind, print disability, because of the case before the neutral blind UK. So the court could not consider other types of disabilities. So the definition that we have is a bit broader than that of the court. And I would recommend that that remain so, because when we draft legislation, we cannot simply look at the court judgment that is applicable or the treaty that is applicable. We must look at our constitution. And our constitution requires equal treatment. In other words, if there's a type of accessible format copy that can assist someone with a different type of disability, then our legislation must provide for that. The other thing that the copyright amendment bill's definition is different from the court's definition is that it does not include substantive issues. Now that is because when we draft, definitions should not include substantive issues. In other words, when we talk about how things will work, what must be done, those must be contained in the text of the bill, and they are, in fact, in the text of the bill. So our definition accords 100% with that of the court, if you take into account our constitution and you take into account drafting conventions. Everything is there in our bill. I would recommend that our definition not be amended. I'm then moving on to slide 9 in respect of an authorized entity. From Housing, there was a request that we must align with the Marrakesh Treaty, and from KwaZulu-Natal that it must be aligned with the finding of the Constitutional Court. So I can confirm that the definitions in fact do comply with that of the treaty, but in respect of complying with the Constitutional Court, I do make a proposal for an amendment. So in respect of paragraph B of that definition, I do recommend that the definition starts with the word an entity, comma, including a government institution. That is currently part of the bill at the moment, but that an entity be added. And then also that we make it clear that these services that we refer to in paragraph B must be delivered on a non-profit basis. This is also a specific requirement of Section 19D. So strictly speaking, we don't have to say it here. But because we add the word an entity, I would recommend that we make it very clear that it's a non-profit activity. Because an entity is quite a broad term. We open the definition up, in other words. So I would recommend that we are cautious in this, that we make it clear that it's a non-profit basis. And that is also confirmed to you that there is a document that is all the amendment, and I also have at the end of my presentation as a list of things that I do recommend. So it is in one place, but I'll just take you through anything as we have to go through the process. From the Northwest, there was a concern about paragraph A of the treaty where it talks to the increased crime. And it seems that they were not sure where that is provided for, as described, where is that provided for. But if we look at clause 35C, it says the minister must make, there's a new subsection to the minister must make regulations providing for processes and formalities related to the authorization or recognition by the government of entities that provide education, institutional training, adaptive reading or information access to certain citizens on a non-profit basis. And that is exactly what I'm going to do. So there is provision made for that. I'm going to slide 10, and I'm not going to say much on slide 10 because the department will speak to this. I did indicate here that there was a request for performance definition to include the word or reference to extract. And I did confirm that our definition does in fact conform with the Beijing Treaty, but the department has indeed, as you will see from their presentation, they are recommending that we then perhaps add the word extra, excluding an extra, and it doesn't take away from the bill at all. And in the sense of extending on performance, I'm also not going to speak to that, the department will address that in their presentation. I'm moving on to slide 11, and this deals with the definition of technological protection measure and the prevention device. And from both, Gauteng and Northwest, there was a comment that the definitions must be compatible with the WBC and the three-step test. There was also some wording proposed for an amendment by the Housing Legislature. So from our office, we can assure members that these definitions are in fact not only fully compatible with the treaties, but also with the three-step test. In fact, the proposed wording from Housing was in fact advertised in the portfolio committee, so that specific formula has been tested, and the concern that the public then raised and that was considered by the portfolio committee at that time was we could see that there would be a severe restriction and breaches in respect of consumer law, competition law, and other security-related breaches. So when we look at the technological protection measure, we must keep in mind that this is where you buy a CD, for instance, and you want to play on your CD player. Now you want to put it on your laptop. And then there's a technological protection measure that stops you from playing on your laptop because you can copy it on your laptop. So the manufacturer puts something on there, can't ban your laptop so that you can't now make a copy. The problem is that it also extends the card, for instance. So you can't take your car to another mechanic. You must send it to the manufacturer. If you have a Ford, you have to take it to Ford. If you buy a John Deere tractor, you must take it in to John Deere to be repaired. You can't tinker with it yourself on your farm. And these are the kind of things that we need to keep in mind for technological protection measure and the circumvention device. So as the technician stands, they do try and bring that balance. Especially because when you look at what we have in fact, America has got quite a strict technological protection measure protection. And some of the criticisms there was that the freedom to arrange your conduct for your own benefit is something that is taken away. In other words, I want to take my vehicle to a mechanic of my choice. I don't want to take my vehicle to the manufacturing company. For whatever reason. So that freedom is curtailed if you make this too strict. Also the freedom of third parties to offer accessory consumable services and repairs. So it also restricts that right of the mechanic to offer the service of, in fact, servicing my vehicle. And then lastly, it also affects the test for transparency of the test. Because your auditors are also unable to uncover and publicize anything. Because if you do that, you can then expose your CPM.
there is a lot of implication for consumer law, security, and competition law that are affected if these become too strict for the definition. So the proposed wording in the bill has been really carefully considered to try and bring that balance to make sure that there's still protection, and in fact, for breaches, there is an effect. So the thing still viewed very seriously by the bill. But by the definitions and the sections that deal with this, that we, the bill is trying to bring some sort of balance between the rights of users and the rights of the copyright owners. I'm moving to slide 12. This specifically deals with section 5 sub 2 and 21 sub 2, where it speaks to local organisations. So we're dealing with ownership of copyright, and we're spoken to local organisations that have been added to these sections. And the Northwest was concerned that we don't know what local organisation would mean, it could be anything. And from outside, we can confirm that no, in fact, it won't be any local organisation, because the bill reads as they increase crime. In other words, local organisations may be affected by these sections, but only if the minister has identified them in regulation. So there will be clarity, there will be certainty. It is not something that is just hanging in the air and something that affects any local organisation. There's also, but from the Northwest, a fear that these sections may lead to a lack of remuneration, that this might be a way to attempt to not pay the necessary dues. But this is not necessarily something I think that should be dealt with in this clause specifically. That is not what these sections deal with. However, there are other provisions in the bill that then deals with remuneration and the right to receive remuneration, and attempt to make sure that remuneration is in fact paid where it is due. On slide 13, section 8A, the question about whether section 8A should be retained for copyright or just be dealt with in the performance protection law will be dealt with by the department. From Housing and Northwest, there was a concern that there is a problem with contractual freedom in respect of the type of remuneration that you can have, because Section 8A only speaks about royalties. But Section 8A is made subject to the Performance Protection Act, and that act allows for royalties or equitable remuneration, which in other words means that there is provision for both made by Section 8A. In respect of contractual freedom specifically, it is only the manner and form that will be prescribed, and not the actual, there won't be a contract that the minister issues and that is what you must sign. So this will deal with whether your contract must be in duplicate, must both copies be signed in the original, will there be witnesses, etc. So that is what manner and form refers to. There was also a request to remove collecting societies. But the problem is that if we remove collecting societies, we run the risk that the amended act may be interpreted as excluding collecting societies. And if a performer then chooses to receive royalties via a collecting society, that may then become difficult. So I would not recommend that the reference to collecting societies is removed. It is optional, it's one of the options given there. Deleting subsection 3, empowering tribunals to set the royalty rate. This is also not recommended. This is a dispute resolution mechanism. It's not something that is a must. If we have a dispute about the royalties, we can go to the tribunal. If the tribunal rate is not acceptable, I just don't sign the contract. I walk away. So it is simply a dispute resolution mechanism. I would not recommend that is removed. Slide 14, section 9A. And dealing with royalties regarding sound recording. The question came with concerns about how will we determine the year in which the majority of offences were committed. So what you must keep in mind is that your bill seeks to set up an offence. That offence will then be started when we go into practice, will be reflected in a charge sheet. So a charge sheet will mention specific dates in that year of the year of this or the period of that, or on this day, if they have specific dates, the person did X, Y, and Z. So then that must be proven by the state. So the state will have to prove all those offences. Any offence that is not proven will not be called part of the offence in the end. So once the court then makes a conviction, the court will say, in that charge one, during the year 2020 to 2021, you did X, Y, and Z on five occasions. During the year 2021 to 2022, you did Y on three occasions. So all of that will be found in the end in your judgment, and it's from there that the court may determine the majority of the cases. So you might find that in practice, the company might be getting away with eight matters in the second year during which they're implementing this, because it wasn't proven in the court. But if it's not proven, then you know we can't punish them for that, because they might be right. They might be saying, no, but this was a valid transaction, and that is their defense in the court finds that there wasn't sufficient evidence. So what in the end will be the majority of offences? Only what was found upon conviction. So a trend of offending, that is not mentioned in the bill, and we do agree that if it was mentioned in the bill, that would be too late. So the trend of offending, I think, refers to the numbers, and I think that's been I've answered before. Furthermore, these offences, we must keep in mind, is prospective. We can't legislate backwards unless we specifically state so. So the offences that are being created now will only apply going forward, and so anyone who is committing it from the behind of the acting of operational will know, look, I am now committing an offence. So it's not something that will go backwards and become vague, because that would be conflicting of people's rights. Slide 15 was just in respect of constitutionality in treaties. That is just the input from the provinces, the concerns that were raised, that there might be arbitrary deprivation, three steps, tests. So those were mostly what was said there. On slide 16, some provinces also expressed the need for balance, and that these exceptions are quite important in order to achieve that balance. So going over to slide 17, this is then where I will speak to the exceptions and arbitrary deprivation. I have already spoken to the committee on this when we discussed submissions that were made, but I will go over it again. But perhaps not, I think I spoke very long in the previous time that I spoke, so I'll try and be a little bit shorter. So first of all, section 25, we must keep in mind, does not create positive rights to property. You only have a right to not be arbitrarily deprived of your property. The two bills, it is our submission, actually do comply with the requirements of section 25 in that it is a law of general application, and that it is not in fact arbitrary. The copyright has always been subject to exceptions. So if we simply had copyright and no exceptions, that would simply, we don't even need an act, we just say you've got copyright in the following. But the idea of copyright is that someone must use the work. So that is then also how the author would be able, or the copyright owner would be able to get some share in the royalties or the equitable or remuneration or etc. And that is why we need to keep in mind that there is a user on the other side. So copyright has always been you are able to use this if you do X, Y, and Z. So the exceptions have always been there. If copyright continues without limit at all, then we will have the rights affected, and in fact the Court of Blind Essay touched on this and indicated where copyright affects certain rights, and they specifically highlighted your rights to equity, human dignity, freedom of expression, cultural rights, education. But also, if there are no exceptions, it will also affect the rights to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, such as the right to receive and enforce impart information and ideas through any media and through education. If we look at the purpose of these bills, we'll see that first off, they wanted to balance these rights, the rights of your copyright owner, your author, and your user. And secondly, to align copyright with the digital era and to promote multilateral development. Furthermore, your exceptions are either subject to the four factor text in section 12A, and where there are specific exceptions listed, further exceptions are listed specifically. Each of those exceptions has their limitations expressly listed that will have any usage will have to be tested against. going on to slide 18. So if we look at the purpose of the exceptions and limitations in the bill, and whether that is in fact aligned with global views development, because remember we're talking about treaties as well when we speak to these matters. In Canada, the court actually found that your exceptions are not simply loopholes. They are in fact the right of a user. And the reason for that is that there must be a proper balance. And to do that, it is necessary not to interpret exception limitations restrictively. It is very important to remember that users' rights are not just loopholes. Both your owner rights and your user rights should be given the fair and balanced reading that fits remedial legislation. WIPO themselves indicated that in order to maintain appropriate balance between the interests of rights holders and users, copyright laws allow a limitation on economic rights, whether it's with or without compensation, without authorization, etc. Also, with the development of new technology, there has been extensive discussions about how limitation exceptions apply in digital environments, including when content crosses borders. And there was also confusion from Professor Cruz from WIPO, which said more or less the same, so I'll not go into that either, but it is there on the slide. Slide 19, I'd like to speak to arbitrary deprivation, and this is where I want to speak about Section 25 versus Section 36, that was the property clause versus the limitations clause. So when we look at the property clause, it has its own limitations. It says, you may not be deprived of your property in an arbitrary way. That is the first requirement. So it is only when deprivation is arbitrary that Section 36 comes into play. If deprivation is not arbitrary, then you are compliant with Section 25 and there is no limitation involved. So I just wanted to make that distinction clear, that Section 36, because we're talking about limitations and exceptions to your right as a copyright owner, which we have said is property, doesn't automatically mean that Section 36 comes into play and that you don't use a proportionality, etc. We must first look at whether that exception limitation is arbitrary. And if it's not, then there is no limitations clause applicable. So what you need to ask on arbitrary is, deprivation would be arbitrary if your law of general application does not provide sufficient reason for the particular deprivation in question, or is procedurally unfair. When we look at sufficient reason, I'm referring you to the judgment in the First National Bank versus Australian West Bank versus the Sash case, and I think I've given that in the notes to the slide. You can find the citations in the notes to the slide. The court indicated that there's a number of relationships that you must consider. The purpose of the law, the purpose of the deprivation, the people affected, the nature of the property, the extent of the deprivation. The court also said that if the property in question is not land, then there will be have to then it is not with less less compelling purposes would still be sufficient. If it is land that is being deprived, your reasons, your rationale for deprivation will have to be more compelling. So we need to keep in mind that we are not here looking at the most compelling reasons possible, because it's not land that we're dealing with. Our reasons have to simply be, we look at the relationship and consider, I think there's four relationships that the court spoke of. So sometimes a mere rational relationship between means and ends will be enough. And then sometimes, especially when we look towards land, proportionality will also come into play. On the next slide, slide 20, these I'm actually just going to skip 20 and 21. All that I do here is to explain the extent of the deprivation. So I go through every clause, section 12, and I indicate what are the limits to that deprivation. So for instance, section 12 has the four factors. What is the nature? How much is the work? What is the purpose of the use? 12B has things like fair practice, non-commercial purposes, and so on. So I'm not going to say too much on that because those clauses are in the bill, but they are summarized there.
Going on to slide 12, and here I'm dealing with the case of South Africa Diamond Producers Organization, and the citation is again in the notes to my slide 12. 22, I apologize. Thank you for that correction. Yeah, that number, my slide 4, that the number are, they might be small fancy, but they are small. So when we look at sufficient reason, so because that is now what we look at when we look at arbitrary. First off, evaluation in this instance is more towards a rational relationship between means and ends than towards proportionality, because if we don't deal with land, we deal with copyright. However, the three-step test in itself speaks to proportionality. But even if these exceptions are tested against proportionality in section 36, we submit that they will comply even with proportionality, because they comply with the three-step test. But if we then look at the purpose of the law and who is affected, we must balance intellectual property, the copyright here, performance protection, against the rights to education, dignity, equality, trade, and freedom of expression. The nature of the property, as I said, is not land, it's not corporeal property, so it does not require a more compelling purpose. The extent of the deprivation, all the exceptions do not deprive the owner of all aspects of ownership. Each of them are limited to very specific instances, and that is also important in respect of the three-step test, that it is very specific instances. Those instances support the development of constitutional and international human rights, and are further, these exceptions are further limited by prescripts to be followed when making use of that exception. The exceptions in the bills are aligning copyright with the digital era, and they promote multilateral development, including constitutional values and human rights. Furthermore, like I said, they're not open-ended, and each of them, 12A or fair use general clause, has four facts that must be complied with, and the rest has very specific exceptions applying to them. The last question on arbitrary is procedural fairness. And as I've indicated, these bills have gone through quite an extensive process. So even when referring back on tagging, in my view, these bills are section 35 because they don't affect trade, they are regulatory in nature, they regulate how copyright works, but the Portfolio Committee even decided to err on the side of caution, as we are allowed by the court the court indicated that Tongwane, in the Tongwane case with Clara, the court indicated that if Parliament errs on the side of caution and makes 75 or 76, that will not render the bill procedurally out of order. So even on tagging, we've gone this very, very safe route and made it 76. Public participation, which is the other procedural requirement in the Constitution, has been complied with. The 76, we are currently going through the process of negotiating mandates, final mandate, etc. So all of the procedures have been followed. It is my submission that these bills are not arbitrarily depriving any person of property. The next slide, 23, deals with trade, occupation, profession. I kept it in, although there wasn't really any comments from the provinces that spoke to any concerns about the bills affecting this right in section 22. But I did keep it in because it does speak to constitutionality, and I thought I wanted to give that assurance again. So the Constitutional Court in the South African Diamond Producers Organization case indicated that legislation only limits your choice if it creates an effective barrier. In other words, if we do a law that says anyone who writes a book may only do so when it is 12 o'clock at night and there is load shedding. That's the only time you may write books. That would be an effective barrier. No one will be writing books at 12 o'clock at night. That's an effective barrier. I'm not going to be an author. It's an effective requirement. I'm not going to choose that as a profession. I love my eyes, even though I can't even see my slide with my glasses on, but I'm not going to write books there. So that is a kind of effective barrier. And yes, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, we don't make laws like that, but I'm trying to draw the picture. So When we say that there are certain exceptions, when you do work, it might be a little bit more difficult. You might have to share some of your profit with the person who wrote the work. You might have to allow someone to do something without your give, having to give personal authority to do so. There's an act that says if it's fair, they may use it. That is not an effective barrier. That is simply regulating an industry. We are saying when it comes to copyright, when it comes to performance, these are the principles according to how we will work, because we need to balance users, authors, performers, copyright owners. All of these role players must be treated equally in the playing field. And therefore, it's our submission as well that Section 22 is not effective. The next slide, Section 24, deals with the three-step test. And as I said before, I've done this as well before, but I will just quickly touch on it. When you look at WIPO, WIPO indicates that limitations and exceptions to copyright vary from country to country. That international treaties acknowledge diversity because of social, economic, and historical conditions. And they leave it to legislatures to decide if particular limitation or exception to be applied and what the scope of that exception will be. So treaties are not giving us a boundary line. They are giving us something that we can look towards and see how it can apply in our country. We must look at our constitution, how it can be fitted into our constitution, and then we apply it from there. But when we look at the three-step test and we look at other countries and how they have developed and looked at the three-step test, first off, the Max Planck Institute in Germany has wrote out a paper on fair use and the three-step test, and they've indicated that you can't just look at the three-step test. One, do you comply? Two, do you comply? Three, do you comply? And you must look at this as a whole, and when you apply that, and you should not give it a narrow interpretation, because you need to look at the objectives of exceptions and limitations as well. And the stipulated specific cases does not mean that fair use is not compliant with three-step test. What they were saying is that your fair use, for instance, is not more or less foreseeable than fair dealing. And then you should also look, when you look at the test, you must look at what is being balanced, your interest from human rights and fundamental freedoms. So on to the next slide, 25. First off, we must keep in mind that any treaty being interpreted will be done so in terms of the Vienna Convention. And Article 31 of the Vienna Convention indicates that practices of other signatories are very relevant to interpretation. So the USA has already applied fair use for decades when it joined BRIC. They were not required to change from fair use. A number of other signatories have since signed a change to fair use, and none have been challenged. The Australian Law Reform Commission considered fair use, and they indicated that because we look at the world and how other countries have done this, and the fact that there has been no challenge to the US, it seems to indicate that fair use thus complies with the three steps. The last slide on this is slide 26, and that deals with the inclusion of the text into legislation. Now, first of all, as I indicated before, WIPO indicates that there's circumstances in each country that will determine the wording that they can be put into legislation. Whether they narrow the scope, extend the scope, change it a bit, add a bit, that will all be determined by that country's history, their constitution, their statute, and so on. But if we include the text, and in fact we did in the portfolio committee, include the text, and that was advertised, and it came back showing that we've made the exceptions impossible. It's no longer an exception. Because if we say there's an exception for research, that's a specific case. But if we add the three-step test to research as an exception, it means that when you are doing research, your specific act must be a specific instance. And it simply becomes impossible to actually make use of that exception, because the exception also has fair practice. And now we need to look at, okay, what is fair practice versus all of these other things, because now we have listed things. That what we're doing is we've layered. If we add the three step tests, we're layering these tests, which then makes exceptions actually going to be impossible and not, we can might as well take them out of the circle because they're not, you won't be able to use them at all. And then just to specifically say again, we don't have to use the wording of the treaty. The next slide 27, deals with section 12A. There were proposals that section 12A be deleted. Now 12A is the general fair use clause. We cannot delete 12A. 12A replaced the fair dealing clause in section 12. So if we delete this, it means that there's no general exception to copyright at all in the Act. And we need to have exceptions. And like I said before, copyright without exceptions affects positive rights in the Constitution and in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. If there is a policy decision taken by the committee to change from fair use back to fair dealing, because I think that is perhaps what the provinces would say, instead of saying delete 12A, they mean let's go back to fair dealing. I think that is what the proposal was. That will have to be an extensive amendment exercise. So it's possible, but we need to keep in mind that it will be an extensive amendment exercise, because what the current Act does not do is provide equal protection to copyright owners, authors, and users. If we look at the blind SA case, that only focused on one aspect, persons with a disability, and it found so many rights that were affected by the Act at the moment. Simply thinking about cultural rights, freedom of expression, those rights will be affected in respect of all persons if we do not amend the Act. But what was done with fair use is the department used a tool to enable the Act to become future-proof, because there are many changes that are happening very fast. I mean, in the time that we've been amending these bills, amending the Act and amending these bills, a number of changes have already taken place in technology, to some extent, that some of the provinces make comments about artificial intelligence needing to be in, etc., etc. So there's already a need for a further review to be done. But what fair use does is it helps future-proof the Act, so that we don't have to make regular amendments to it. Because if we have to go back to fair dealing, there will have to be consultations and consideration of the list of amendments that need to be added, the list of exceptions and limitations that need to be added to the Act in order to make it fair to copyright owners and to authors. So that will be quite an exercise, because fair use simply allows that to be done based on certain factors without you having to list each exception that is applicable. So from our office, we would recommend that the current policy of fair use should be retained as the policy was not constitutional master. These exceptions have clear limitations to ensure protection of owners, while that is the rights of users to ensure protection of rights are given effect too. There are many other countries that use fair use, and from those examples, and from the speak to that as well, we can see that there is no detriment to their economy. In fact, innovation tends to flourish. On slide 28, there was a concern that no other legal systems uses a hybrid system. So keep in mind what we're doing is 12A from the general clause, and then we list specific amendments with their own limitations and prescripts. There are, in fact, other countries. Just quickly looking, I could find Israel, South Korea, and I believe that there are others that also use a hybrid system, but it's not that it is unknown. That fair use will create litigation or legal uncertainty, that is also not correct. 12A provides four factors. Each of the other exceptions provides their own limitations, their own tests, etc. There's a lot of clarity given in respect of each exception. It's only when there's a dispute between the copyright owner and the user that you might end up in court. And that's happening on fair dealing as well. It's not every case that's reported. The reported cases are those that change the law to some extent, or the clarity of the law but I've found over 1,000 cases dealing with fair dealing. So it's not that fair dealing was not a litigious test to be applied. And I'm sure that fair use will go to court, but I cannot see it going to court more than fair dealing necessarily did. We've got examples from other countries that can be used of what is fair use. This is not a new thing that we're introducing into our law globally. There are other countries that we can look at, and it's not just the courts that can look at that. I was able to find in the USA, they actually have a database. So you type in a book, want to use 3 pages, and they actually go through an example where that was done, and they tell you if the court there found it to be fair or not. So there's a massive database that people can use in that regard. Slide 29. There was a proposal from Mpumalanga to add an amendment to 12A, our general clause, that authors need to be consulted before they were released. Now, fair use, and the rationale for this was remuneration, so that they can be remunerated. But the rationale for section 12A is that there won't be remuneration, so there won't be compensation, because this is going to be a limited use. I'm going to quote from your work, or I am doing a criticism on your work. So that is why I don't need your authorization. I'm not going to pay you for the fact that I'm criticizing your work. If I'm giving you a good criticism, you should maybe pay me, but definitely not the other way around. But then if I have to, for instance, do this for an assignment that's due tomorrow, for me to be able to contact the author in America, I can see his email address, so the publisher's email address, I can write to them, but they're not going to come back to me tomorrow. So then I won't be able to publish my criticism or use your quote that in your book actually gives your book some recognition, because I have to still say who you are. I can't just use the quote that made it mine. There are restrictions on that. So I won't recommend that that be added. The rationale of my compensation is valid, but it is addressed in other aspects of the book. Then there was also concern that fair use is contrary to South African law, and I think the terminology is perhaps just not correct. The fact that something is new in South African law doesn't mean it's contrary. That is why we have legislation, is that we change what we have at the moment. So anything that changes or that becomes new will then become the law going forward. Slide 30, this deals with Section 12B. And specific exceptions there. The concerns about paragraphs A and B, I do not understand, they're not new exceptions. They are currently in the Act. If we don't amend the Act, that they will stand. But even so, looking at them, there's no reason to say that they will not comply with the 3-step test. In respect of H, that is the personal copies one, but that exception complies with the 3-step test. First of all, confined to specific cases, it must be personal use, not commercial use. It must be per fair practice. And fair practice is not that I can go and make a whole copy of a textbook that is freely available in all our bookstores. That's just not fair practice. But yes, I can make a copy maybe of a chapter, because that is what I'm going to use for my assignment. And for the same reasons, and like I said, the test must be read once. It will also not conflict with normal exploitation and not unreasonably prejudice the rights and interests of the copyright owner. The next slide, slide 51, deals with 12B. Again, personal copies, and the proposal was for the word required lawfully to be added. This phrase was actually applied to the portfolio committee as well, to add that. And a concern was raised by a number of members of the public that especially your sectors like libraries, because library users borrow books, they didn't necessarily acquire them, they borrowed it. So your terminology becomes problematic. And the paragraph H provides for fair practice already there. The limitations are already there. And to define it, if you start defining it, you're also making it more difficult if the matter goes to court, for a court to say, but actually, I think it's fair, but unfortunately, the definition says you must have, bought it or been given it as a gift. The fact that you borrowed it from someone is not good enough. So I would not recommend that this amendment is made. It was duly considered. The public was given an opportunity to comment on it, and it showed a lot of concern and how it would affect a lot of sectors. In Section 12B, slide 32, There's a concern from Gauteng that while he seeks legitimizes plagiarism, but it is in fact not so. Subsection 6 must be read with Subsection 8, which says that you must provide the name of the author if it appears on the work. So there's no risk for plagiarism there. Slide 33, indeed with libraries archive. There was just some concern about the word use and the word access, but these words are in fact really used in this section. The one provides for interlibrary loan systems where the library grants temporary access to another library's work, that comes back, but that is how libraries operate. And using a word to the extent appropriate to its activities, in other words, it's not just using it for anything. It must be as per the activities of the library and archives and museums and so on. There was also a concern about the fact that you may play audiovisual work, but remember that this is for academic studies. So I remember in my first year I had to go look at a video of a song and I failed that exam because I didn't have that to stop at all. But the idea was that for academic purposes I needed to go and watch the video and analyze it and play the song. The next slide, slide 34, that is simply the provision of the publication of Section 19D, and I don't think I'm going to say much about that. Section 35 speaks to whether it should be all disabilities and all work, and I have in fact already spoken to why it is broader and the fact that we need to keep our constitution in mind. But I can also just mention that in my case, they identify beneficiaries as the person with a visual disability. But in Article 12, they actually indicate that the treaties are precious other limitation and exemption for persons with disabilities. Then, in other words, in Marrakesh itself, they indicate that we can go broader than just persons with a visual disability. And then providing for all words and not just literary words, and this actually came from the lawyer who was assisting Brian S.A. She said, if you limit this to literary work, as the court did, what happens to the blind musician? Because sheet music, is it literary? Is it musical? Is it a sound recording? You know, because sound recording is defined, it sounds funny to say, but it says any fixation or storage of data or signal representing sound. So that could be sheet music. So if we exclude work, we run the risk of excluding someone with disability from being able to access an accessible format copy of the document. Slide 36, I'm not going to focus on it now. I have presented this before and all the provinces agreed with the court's proposed amendment. So these simply are reflecting the court's proposed amendment. As I've already spoken to authorized entity definition to adding an entity in 19D to just make sure that authorized entity is not as prescribed but is on its own because it is defined. And that's just really a drafting error there. Adding a subsection 3 that means that goes with that you can make an acceptable format copy of the copy that's already in the position. You don't always have to go to the original. And then the rest are actually just consequential amendments that are proposed. Section 21, commissioned work, slide 37. There was a concern about the tribunal granting a license, but the tribunal's role here is limited to situations where the commissioned work is not used by the person who commissioned it. And I recall from past discussions that this was specifically related where documentaries were made on commissioned by the FAC and they have never been edited in decades. Which then means that that author's work is lying in an archive, so it's never been shown, all that work has gone down the drain, in the sense of it's lost. You know, the FAC paid for it, but I mean the purpose behind the work being made like that is for it to be seen and for other people to understand what you've done. Because it can also give that author other opportunities. So what will happen in these instances is the tribunal will listen to the case. So if it was a personal painting of myself and I'm saying, well, I'm going to put it in the gallery, and then I decide, no, I don't have my hairstyle in this portrait, I'm just going to put it in my bedroom. Of course, I can't come and ask you to use that portrait because the clause actually says, if the work is of a personal nature, the tribunal may not allow the use thereof. So it will only be in respect of something like a documentary or an art piece that is not of personal nature where this can be done. And then there will be remuneration paid to the copyright owner. And of course, because it's before the tribunal, the copyright owner can put their case forward as well. Slide 38, when we get to offences, there was a request from Gauteng to replace this with civil remedies. Now, I'm not going to speak to that. The department will speak to whether offences where the civil remedies are there. But what Gauteng also indicated is that intention must be clear, and I agree with it. So there is an amendment that I proposed. It was subparagraph 2 and 3. They must actually be read together. Otherwise, we are making something an offence that the Act actually, the bill actually allows. So there's another proposal that I made in respect of the proposed amendment. On slide 39, there again, Hoffman made a proposal that section 27.5b actually also make something offence that the bill allows. And that is simply because in section 28p, we are only making provision for exceptions, not for limitations. So the proposal is that we say an act permitted by law, including in terms of any exceptions. Then in other words, if something is allowed by law, it cannot be an offence. And I agree with that proposal for that amendment to be made. Then Consent also proposed new offences. The one that they proposed, the first one they proposed, I think might have been not complete offences, because it simply says, act with the devil creates machine equipment contrived by software. But in our cell phones, and I can see a lot of cell phones and tablets lying around the table, we all possess software. And just as that sentence in will mean that we all possess an offence simply by being in possession of the cell phone. So I think the sentence might not be complete, but as it is, I would not recommend that. The next one that I proposed about distribution, that is provided for in the current section 371, which is the Act, and the new 5A. And then I also proposed where a person stores more than 5 different infringing works on an electronic storage device. And I would recommend that we are cautious with this, because what this makes an offence is possession. And the Act does not at the moment make possession an offence, and it has very specific implications. For instance, again, if I look at my cell phone, I started hearing my chat actually on WhatsApp because I'm getting so many pictures and things being sent to me, and I don't know where it comes from, videos. You know, you're just forward. So you don't even know if the music on the person who owned it initially gave that permission. There's a big likelihood if someone looked at my phone, you will find probably 20, 30, if not more. And no, actually it was because I've recently cleared all my chat, but you know, before it was full and I had like over 1,000 videos from WhatsApp on my phone, you would likely have found a number of infringing content. But there was no intention, no knowledge. So I would say caution. I'm not saying possession should never become an offence. But I think that this is something that the department will have to go and look at. And see, you know, it may be like you need to have intentionally downloaded from the source, not something that was forwarded to you as part of social media, anything. But I think that there needs to be a lot of research first before possession is made an offence. I would not recommend that being done right now. I think there might be a lot of implications that we might overlook. Slide 40. Again, there was a concern by the Northwest that there's a need that it should not be necessary that the device actually was used. And in fact, I can confirm that is not required. It's not required that the actual device did infringe copyright. It's simply necessary for it to be possible to infringe copyright. And then I also proposed that they should circumvent copyright, but I think that we are talking two terms here. It is technological protection measures that are circumvented and copyright has been infringed. So my submission is that Bill is using the correct phrase. There was a proposal to delete enabling or assisting any other person to circumvent. But if we delete this, the fact that you have assisted someone and that assistance can enable them, if we delete that, it means that you simply assist them, it could never have worked, now we make that an offence. And that becomes a strict liability. I would recommend that we retain that it's necessary that the assistance that is provided would in fact have enabled circumvention. There was also a request for fines to be stipulated. That can be done, but when we consulted the Department of Justice some time ago on the drafting of offences and so on, the proposal was not to use a number, because the rand value goes up and down. It's not what it was 10 years ago. If we put in 5,000 now, in 10 years' time, that's nothing. So if we put a prison sentence, that is a little bit consistent. And there is an act that allows courts to translate the length of the prison sentence in the act with what the current rand value is of the appropriate fine at that time. So although it can be done, it's not recommended simply because of that, because the rand value changes. Slide 41, there's a proposal in respect of section 28P that is too narrow and it can't achieve its objection. And I do agree with that, and there I propose also the same wording that has been proposed by Caltech. There's a concern about removing the reference to the Electronic Communications Transactions Act. That was actually done because those specific sections have been since deleted by the Cyber Crimes Act, and that are contained in the Cyber Crimes Act. So we would not recommend that we refer to the Cyber Crimes Act now, because we have the same situation going forward. If the Cyber Crimes Act is then replaced by something else, or the sections are repealed or whatever, you still have those sections here. Cyber Crimes Act will apply whether this bill refers to it or not. It must be applied in conjunction, because it deals with other matters. Slide 42 simply deals with the provincial inputs on regulations and unenforceable contracts, and 43, I then agreed to that. And the department will also speak to this, but I think what I just want to say is that first of all, we don't have the right freedom to contract. We have a right to freedom to trade, occupation, profession, and in that we will enter into contracts. But in contracts itself on the right to freedom to contract, I think there may be a term that people are meaning and it's not really coming forward. But many contracts have pretty quite formalities in terms of surety agreements, the sale of property. And in fact, property has so many requirements that, you know, it's not easy not to get your house registered. It takes months and months and months to comply with all those things. Also from the Parliament Commission, there was a recommendation for some terms to be prescribed standard terms. And this is for protection, because there is no contractual equality when it comes to authors and to copyright owners. If we say a party can contract out of this act, the copyright owner will contract out and wherever they can profit and get more money from that contract. So we need to protect the authors who are the vulnerable parties here to make sure that their rights are protected, and that is what the minister will prescribe. But I am making a proposal for an amendment there that I hope will perhaps address that fear of contractual freedom, so that we take our compulsory, but we call it standard terms, reflecting the rights as set out in this act. Now I'm making it clear, I'm trying to make it clear that the minister can't just go and prescribe anything. He can't say you need to give your firstborn child to the author. If he can't do that, it must be a right that is contained in the act. So you can say the right contained in section 22 must be reflected in your contract. You must indicate what is the royalty or the equitable remuneration. You must indicate how often that will be paid. So those are the kind of things that will then be there. In respect of prescribing royalty rates or tariffs, there's also concern about that you can't have a one-size-fits-all. And the proposal is that it's only made in respect of resale and royalty rights. That is what was proposed also. I think by the Commission, who said that they need to be prescribed things. The short title, there's a proposal for Housing, and I think this was because of the IPO Amendment Act that is with the President and nothing has happened to it yet. Now, yes, we can say that it must be not there for 24 months, et cetera, but I'm making two proposals. And in fact, I did not think of this before Housing made this proposal, but because I accepted that the Act will cover the operations, which that's what Act was supposed to be. But in fact, we have a problem with 19B. If the issues with blind essays aren't coming into operation before the deadline, then we have a problem, because then persons with a disability will not be able to access all blinds of copies, accessible copies. So I would definitely recommend that either, then also explain this about prevention clauses. So the short title of prevention clause need not have a prevention clause. It can simply say this bill is called, or this act is called the Copyright Amendment Act 2023. It can stop there. Upon publication by the president, that act then comes into operation automatically. Why we put the prevention clause is if there are things that need to happen in the meantime. And I think, for instance, in this bill, we've got the collection society, the tribunal, there will be some things that have to be placed. Those sections can come into operation. So what I would recommend, and we can even then accommodate what Caltrain was proposing, is that we do my second proposal there, which will read, but after the Copyright Amendment Act, so don't worry about 2017, that is the editing that you will sort out with the final rule, and comes into operation 24 months from the date of publication in the Gazette. In other words, that is the spot for 24 months. If nothing happens in the meantime, the Act will become operational 24 months from that publication in the Gazette. Or an earlier date fixed by the President by proclamation. Then, if the President proclaims earlier, then the Act comes into operation. Otherwise, 24 months, 24, I also must say that's the proposal from Gauteng, the committee could decide on 12 months. But then two and three, that we make specific provision for the definitions of accessible format copy, authorized entity, and person with a disability to come into operation on the date of publication in the Gazette, and the same with section 19D in clause 22. So that will mean that those sections dealing with persons with a disability will have immediate operation simply to deal with the possibility of the Act not coming into operation quickly enough. On instance of performance protection and slide 46, there was a concern about foreign artists. I think it's important to also speak to that. But section 3 does state that this applies in the state of performances that you made to regard in the Republic. So that is only applying to performances in the Republic. Slide 47, the definition. There was a proposal to repeat the definitions that are currently in the Copyright Act. We can do that. The problem is, if you amend the Copyright Act, you will then automatically have, if you amend those definitions of the Copyright Act, you have to amend the Performance Protection Act as well. Whereas, because these two acts work together, you can't have performance protection without looking at the Copyright Act. There is a symbiosis. You can have that reference, and then in the end, you only need to amend the one. For instance, saying that copyright does the same on the US performer in the Performance Protection Act. There was a concern about producer being a legal person, but our Interpretation Act indicates that person, the word person, whoever it appears in any act, includes any body of person, corporate or unincorporated. So, natural persons or legal persons. I've already dealt with the appetite on these cultural protection measures. Slide 48. There was a concern about the compulsory and standard contractual terms, and I'm making the same proposal here, that we take away compulsory and that we make it clear that what is prescribed must be reflecting rights set out in these acts. But in other words, it's not anything, you can't be giving away your firstborn child, it must be something that is in the actual act. Then my next couple of slides, and I think I am running seriously out of time, so I'm not going to read. It is time for members to talk on this, but they definitely speak to all the proposed amendments. I also have a specific document that members receive on that. I just quickly want to speak to amendments proposed by the department in their presentation that is coming now. And I just want to confirm that everything that they are proposing, I am happy with from a legal point of view. And the one that I want to point out to the committee is that I'm going to say that if it's necessary, we can add a definition of dramatic work. The Act has that definition already, but the proposal was to amend it. The bill, however, does not amend that definition, so it will be a new insertion into the bill. I have concerns with active ID. We don't have to ask the House for permission to do so because Section 1 is open. But in my view, we will have to act with time. that given to be considered. And not only this House, but also when you go to the National Assembly, they will have to advertise again. I don't think it's a contentious matter, but it will add to the processing of this bill. And I know that there's a number of other matters that are also new, new proposals, and that the proposal would rather be to look at that in a subsequent amendment bill, rather than next process where there can be consultation on this, et cetera, et cetera. So I would recommend that the committee looks at the proposed definition of thematic work, and if it is really necessary, to do so now. Simply because we are going into an election year, we have a constitutional deadline that this bill will now deal with. So maybe just to look at that, I'm not saying don't do it, I'm just saying keep in mind it will lengthen the process. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I have said a lot.
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll take the presentation from the department. We must look at the person that I share to advocate the department. And then after that, we will ask the question to both the department and the advocate department. That's on this one, the issue of dramatic work. Because it came from the public hearing, is it necessary then to have another public hearing now? Because if it was, it didn't come from the public hearing, but it just came from the members themselves, I think it would require public hearing. But I remember it's one of the submissions from the public. So I just wanted to check if it is there necessary to have another round of public hearing.
Unfortunately, yes, Chair. So we've got two judgments at the moment about that. Because the thing is, it was maybe one or two members of the public that made that input. Now we will cross wording that the rest of the public has never seen, and therefore they need to be consulted on. It is unfortunate. It is something that we almost feel like we never stop consulting. But we do try from our side to make sure that it's not, we don't just do it, we don't give that advice on unnecessarily. But in this case, the wording will be brand new. It will be something that the public has never seen before. It will come from one or two members of the public. So we unfortunately have cases like that. And in fact, one of the bills that was before on agriculture was the Veterinary Association on Medicine, the word veterinary was added to a clause, and the court found that had to be published, even though the act deals with vets, because it was added to the bill and it wasn't there before, the court said you had to publish the inclusion of that one word.
Would that then mean also the provinces must do likewise?
I'm actually not sure that is a requirement, because in the end, if we look at the MOSA, the Constitutional Court says that this committee can outsource, if we can call it like that, its duty to facilitate public involvement to the provinces. But it needs to make sure that the provinces have in fact done that public consultation. What Parliament has done is these select committees are now having their own public participation. So if a province slips up, Parliament will comply with its public participation instruction from the Constitution. So it's not necessary for the provinces to do so. However, every province might make their own decision in that regard and might say, yes, we think we'll have to advertise this, especially those provinces who did not make that recommendation might feel that they have not had an opportunity to consider and hear what the public requires. So it is possible that it might in provincial. I don't think that there is a legislative requirement for that to be done, but I think that provinces might decide for them to do so.
I believe
someone
wants to say.
Chairperson, actually, just concur with Jermaine, we had discussed the matter prior to the meeting. The concern, however, is that should the committee agree to inserting this definition into the bill without the relevant public participation or without consensus with the provinces, we could end up with a constitutional challenge. That having been said, we have in previous instances included definitions in the bill to enhance the quality of the bill, because you don't want to spend money and resources conducting public hearings again on the bill when this bill is still going to go back to the provinces, and in terms of which they will have to submit the final and voting mandate to us. My solution, and easier solution to the problem, would be that perhaps members could lobby their provinces to request that this be inserted in their mandate. If the proposed amendment comes from the provinces, there's nothing stopping the committee from considering the insertion of this definition in the bill. We can even apply for, if needed, for permission from the House, but I'm not of the opinion that that is required in this instance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we come back on this issue? Because I see our hands are going up. Can we pack it? We'll come back to it today. Can we take care of the department? Because I'm also looking at the time.
Yes, on the question of time, not for the week, but on the question of time for the vote to be completed, well, 11 months. So, Kevin, so I think both ourselves, the National Assembly, and the provinces need to take that into account. And this vote comes from a previous month already. So I think we need to just look at those matters so that when we do take it forward, we take time into consideration so that we're looking at the problem, we will take that into consideration.
No, I think the bills themselves don't necessarily have country, but that is part of the judgment of Blanket that must be changed within 24 months. Yeah, it's only that part. If there are no judgment, then the bill will be running for it. If it lapses, it lapses, then they start there from afresh. The only thing that can be because of that judgment. So as we deal with the bill, must also take into account the judgment. Mm-hmm. Let me give you the opportunity, Honorable Lambert.
Yeah. Chair, I would rather suggest we have this conversation and then have the department as well. Otherwise, we're going to be rushed at this. But it's your hands to make it forward. There's a few things that. Firstly, I appreciate that we have somebody that has knowledgeable. There is, however, just a slight feeling that I'm getting, and please don't take this as a negative, but I mean, you said yourself, you're dealing with this since the first parliament, and I get this feeling that a lot of the inputs that was given, which is kind of, you know what, this is something that we need to get through, irrespective of what parliament has said, and there's a few small edits, but a lot of the inputs are just washed over. That's a better word than I would have used. So that is a concern. And I, not casting aspersions, but is there any other legal people that have also looked at it? Because if it's your work that you've done from the beginning, if I want three legal opinions, I go and ask three lawyers, and I'll get three different legal opinions. If you're the only one that's looking at this, defending it, coming back again, we're getting the same inputs on it, and that is a concern. I'm also concerned about that 24-month clause, and this maybe, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't understand it, but then we're taking away the right of the president to sign it all. Because we say, listen, if he doesn't sign it all, then it's in any case going to come into effect. And that is something, whether you like the president or not, that is... That is something that I am concerned about. And that's what I want to ask you, if you would allow it, that we maybe deal with this part first. Otherwise, we're going to sit at the end of this meeting. People are going to run away because they have other commitments at other times, and we might not resolve it. That's just something that I think.
Wow.
I don't think that allows them to take the department, because you might not have an opportunity for the department to respond, because it also has a responsibility to respond to the submission on the negotiating mandate that we need by the process. Here from the department, and then the first thing that will have the advocate for the member will respond to the concern that we raise. Also other members who have the session with the LFO will also have the opportunity and also have the opportunity to ask the department as well. Dr. Mansour.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning once again, everyone, honorable members. I will use the hard copy presentation as the advocate. And I apologize, I think the text might be a bit small, and I hope that you can see it, honorable members. Okay, thank you. It's because of the time and the amount of details we had to listen to, I'll try to be brief in some of the slides because of the previous presentation that was made also not so long ago on some of the similar issues, but noting the mandates from the provinces. So I'll start with slide 3. I won't go into the detail of it. It's self-explanatory in terms of how their provinces so far have viewed the bills and the mandates negotiated. So that is slide number 3 in the mandate. And I will talk a little bit on slide 4. In slide 4, the reason why I think it's important to talk to the observations that were made is that it will assist when provinces go back in terms of the issues that were deliberating in the provinces that were raised by various stakeholders. So the first observation that we made is that there were certain proposed conditions raised by the provinces that were already in the bill. So meaning that there could be a comment saying that we need to regulate collecting societies as an example, but that is already provided for. So this is just an observation, meaning that such amendments or such input or comments should be looked at as they have been responded to because the bill already has those amendments. And there were other mandate issues that were conditioned, that we're talking to the mandate of other government departments, and some were implementation related issues. So there is a slide that talks to that as examples of some of those types of issues. And many of the areas or issues were recurring, and they were themed as well as part of preparation. Advocate has done something like that in terms of the grouping of the issues because there were similar issues raised across the board by various provinces. And there were some mandates where provinces took the submissions from the public directly and just put them in the mandate, and then it would reflect different areas. So because of the amount of the issues, and some of them are repetitions, they will not be reflected on the slide, but it does indicate that they have been looked at, they have been reviewed and taken into consideration, and they will be, they have been, some of them grouped into the themes, and they are also reflected in the metrics that will be circulated from the department in an attempt to respond to those issues. Another observation is that many of the, we noted that there were new amendments that were proposed, and also talking to the previous discussion about the definition, that is the new definition, of course in the Act, but it's got the implications that it needs a process, its own process. So there were new amendments that were suggested by several provinces. On slide 5, this addresses the concerns that was raised by different provinces, including the Western Cape, Northern Cape, the Eastern Cape, on the issues related to culture and traditional knowledge and the heritage of the country in the Indo-Pacific and their relationship popularized. So we do have a law that is in the statute. It's called the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act. It was passed into law in 2013. It has not been operational since it has been passed. And the bill recognizes indigenous knowledge. Indigenous knowledge is very important because it forms part of the culture and heritage of the country, and it has the potential to contribute to economic development and also to the development of the cultural diversity of South Africa. It aims to recognize and protect certain manifestations of indigenous knowledge. So the law amends four pieces of legislation. They are they include the Copyright Act, the Performance Protection Act, the Trademark Act, and the Design Act to include certain forms of traditional knowledge in those legislation. And in the same breath, we have another department, the Department of Science and Innovation, that has got another law called the Protection, Development and Management of Indigenous Knowledge Act, which was passed in 2019. It deals with the promotion and preservation of indigenous knowledge. And the aspects that from the current law, the Intellectual Property Law Amendment Act, that is of interest is around the issues of informed disclosure, informed content, disclosure of source of origin, and the benefit sharing agreement in terms of the areas that are applicable for their law. There was a coordination or some engagement between the two departments. At some point, we had to put some processes of the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act on hold while we were working on this three general legislation that looks at traditional knowledge broadly. And there was a meeting in 2020 in the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry where the two departments engaged in terms of implementation of how the two laws interface. Those discussions are ongoing, and we recognize that this area of the legislation is very important, ensuring that the traditional knowledge when it comes to copyright and related rights. So there is work ongoing. I'm aware that they have regulations that we're working on the other legislation, and there has been ongoing discussions previously also with our regulators, CIPC, with the other departments. So it's something that is underway as well. So on the other issues that I mentioned from the observations, on slide 6, that there were other issues raised on the mandate that were not necessarily related to the bill, but talking to other issues. The example is on slide 6. For example, there was a comment that said that arts and culture should be introduced as subjects at school levels. The National Department of Arts and Culture must assist in the establishment of 5 arts and culture district centers. So this is just to indicate that on the mandate, most of the provinces voted in favor in most respects, subject to certain issues being dealt with. So in some of the respects, in issues of this nature, because it's not necessarily talked to the bill, I just wanted to bring this to the attention of the committee, just for noting that some of them are of this nature and may not be responded to the way, because they don't talk necessarily to the bill. The issue of local content is highlighted a little bit more from the, we talked to the mandate of another department of communications, I think digital technologies, specifically on the communications. They deal with the issue of local content, and they are not in the bill currently. I know that other stakeholders were also concerned about that, to say, why is the bill not talking to local content issues? that's where there could be a prescription of how much content of local substance should be placed in our local media, whether it's television or radio broadcasting. So it's something that is not related to the bill, both bills, and also outside the scope of the mandate of the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. Another general area that was raised is around the socio-economic impact assessment. This is a broader issue. Many stakeholders raised it from different provisions of the bill, especially on the fair use provision and the exceptions. And we have tried to explain it several times, and I think we have not succeeded in the explanations. But we have addressed it as well in this in the slide. So it starts on slide 7, and it's twofold. There is the socio-economic impact assessment system that is government managed by the presidency that deals with the socio-economic studies impact assessment when a legislation or a policy has to go through parliament cabinet process. And then there are these regulatory impact assessment studies that are done to assess the scope of a particular legislation or a policy to ensure that issues that have been proposed have been tested, have been assessed, and they have been consulted on. So another one is more that is dealt with by a department or an organization just to make sure that issues are dealt with. The other one is a mandatory requirement. In terms of the mandatory requirement, the department did comply, but it must be emphasized, when the first draft bill was completed and put out for public comment, the guideline was not yet approved or in place. So we finalized the first draft before that process, and then there was a guideline that was the guideline that then determined how policies and legislation should be addressed, and that was in October of 2015. And since then, I won't go through all the areas that are there, but since then the department did several CSs, because there was the first set of CSs that took place before cabinet approval, and then following that, so it was in 2016 when they were presented, and then there were certificates that were issued, and then following that there were further processes that required additional years pending different discussions, and also when they were introduced into parliament. I think the next one was when the performance protection was introduced in December of 2015, and then also there was another one when the copyright amendment bill was introduced into parliament. This is important because there has been reports and media speculating that the department is represented, the CS process in government by not doing a CS, and that there are different versions of the CS that are out. And it's true, there were different processes in government. And just to clarify further, there is no requirement for a CS to be published in the public, like in a gazette for the public to see, because these are internal departmental processes. And the guideline does say that departments are responsible for attaching the final impact assessment legislation, regulation, or policy when submitting for approval to the relevant authority, whether those are cabinet, parliament, or minister. So the responsibility to these relevant authorities, not necessarily to the general public. So we can share the different versions, but we have been sharing them. Even in provinces, in some provinces, when we were made to present such, we have provided information and the information that is most updated. But if they need to see the other studies related to the CSS, we can make those available. We do have those copies, but it was part of a lengthy process, and it was not just one-off. It had different steps to it. Now, coming to the other types of studies, these bills were informed by studies, and they started as far back as 2009, and some of them were dealt with academic institutions. One of the most notable studies we did was with the World Intellectual Property Organization, and it was between 2010 and 2012. And I'm going to read part of the content of what they said. I won't take time on that. They recommended or indicated in the study that the South African copyright regime does not include exceptions and limitations for the visually impaired or for the benefit of people with any other disability, as well as for the technological protection measures, such as encryption of the protected material and electronic rights management information, such as digital identifiers. Furthermore, despite the existence of exceptions for purposes of work, of illustration for teaching and research, the legal uncertainty surrounding the use of works has led to the conclusion of agreements between the collecting societies and educational establishments to the financial detriment of the latter. As exceptions have the potential to create value, we suggest that DTI should review the three-step test and with the same use provision and clarify clauses as necessary. So they have recommended as a fact, one of the studies, that we need to look at fair use and also the exceptions for education for the different sectors of the copyright-based industry. And this is as far back as 2012, 2010, around that time. And then there was the Copyright Review Commission. And the Copyright Review Commission, although it focused mostly on the music industry and the composers and so on, and the collecting societies, it made a list of recommendations that found themselves in the bill. So the bills were informed substantially. And we also did a regulatory impact assessment study in 2014. It was related to the IP policy, and it also looked at other industries like the publishing in it. It talked to treaties, like welfare treaties, and there was some reference to fair use there as well. So, in addition, there was extensive public participation on the bill, and they spent as far back as 2009, and as the bill evolved and the processes that were indicated by advocates in Parliament. There were other processes that we undertook as a department outside. They also included the conference that took place in 2015.
Yeah. What I suggest is that it's good that you focus in on this socio-economic underserved, because most public interested. And I was going to suggest then that after you check with it, maybe other than other slides, you can just talk to them the way that the advocate was doing. But I allow you on this one to be, maybe take some time. Because almost all the provinces, even the stakeholders, were raising this issue. So that's why I think we can focus on so that can clarify. But then I would suggest that maybe by one of us, after she finished clarifying the socio-economic impact assessment.
Yeah, but that is exactly what I raised before, because this is what happens often, I don't want to say every time, that now it's not going to be justice to the presentation prepared, and then we're going to be pushed in the end. That's why I ask people that we finish that work and then ask that they come back and do justice to it, because now to do the other 51 slides in 30 minutes.
They have to be there, for example, if you're able to get the document. So that's why I'm saying that this focus is on the socio-economic impact assessment. But after that, then yes, it's important like, in terms of the actions that are related as well as the process. You can continue with that.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. So in terms of the overall, the point being made on this slide is that there was extensive research, extensive agency studies were conducted, and consultations in the parliamentary processes and outside parliament as far back as more than 10 years. So we think that they were sufficiently addressed, but also on the new proposed amendments that they also proposed in the parliamentary processes, it was not possible that each and every provision will get its own CS report or its own regulatory impact assessment study. And after they were introduced in Parliament in 2017, it was not, given the parliamentary process now, it was not possible to do other CSs in terms of procedures of Parliament. And now on slide 9, it's about concerns that were raised by the provinces on the international treaty alignment. And on this slide, one just indicates the international obligations that we are part of, that includes the Bern Convention, the TRIPS Agreement, and then the other treaties that we are not yet party to, but that inform the bill. And in terms of our legal advice in the department and also in Parliament and other technical legal opinions that we received, the bills are in compliance with the treaties and international obligations, although in some respect we are not party to them, and taking into account also our constitutional obligations. So this is just to say that there is that alignment, including under Section 12A of the EU. And this also talks to the presentation that was dealt with by the advocate. On the definition of broadcast, now getting into the substance of the bill, the definition of broadcast is the first one that I'm going to talk to. In the definition, there was extensive debate and deliberations on the definition of broadcast. And this definition was discussed from the international treaty implications initially to say that it's not aligned to the treaties. It, for example, it was referring to the wire transmission mechanism. And the concern was that wire should not be in the definition. So we had to then have the deliberations that were extensive around that. And but then in the deliberations there were unintended consequences of the removal of the word wire because of the impact on the industries that are still dependent on this method of transmission. And so that was dealt with. However, there were other concerns around the definition in terms of the policy process that is currently underway with the white paper by the relevant department dealing with digital broadcasting. And there are discussions also internationally around the definition. That means that it may change depending on those future deliberations. And in the current definition in the bill, concerns were around the certain wording or terminology used to say that they're confusing, and that by using the bill, certain transmission methods are removed, meaning that now there's a limitation in terms of how the definition is addressing issues. And there's a risk that certain types of broadcasting transmission methods may not be involved or included in the definition. So because of these complications, the terminology issues, the international implications, and the concerns that were raised by various stakeholders, experts, and the provinces, it is recommended that the definition of broadcast be retained in the Act as currently. So we are recommending that with all these implications and concerns, even with the current definition in the bill, that the definition is the act they retain, and that all the other issues that then will be addressed or dealt with in the future amendments. And when it comes to the one about the dramatic work, we did present it in the public hearing processes. And we noted the concerns of the industry when they came for the public hearings and also in their submission in terms of how they are treated, like they are not treated uniquely, and that they tend to be also confused with the audiovisual sector, but their industry is more than that, and that they require more, they need to be taken into account in a more specific way. So the definition is substantive. Yes, there is the definition of dramatic work in the Act, but it is substantive, Chair, to an extent that it might also have implications for other provisions, as you rightfully suggested the last time, to say it might also affect other sections of the Act. So it has bigger implications in terms of the way it is. So it's not a matter of just amending certain wording because of the way that they also captured it in the proposed amendment. So we had a discussion with the advocate around this, and we reviewed our stance on it, Chair, and we are of the view that we support that there be this amendment to the definition. However, we also note that it is extensive in nature, and it may have implications in the Act apart from just the definition. We recommend that maybe the recommendation to amend can be maybe looked at in the subsequent amendment processes, not necessarily in this one. So it's just a revision of our initial position on it to say that it must be amended. We look at it in terms of how big the scope is. It needs a better consideration rather than a rushed process of just placing it in the legislation. So that's the bit of more consideration we give to it. And then the other definition that was proposed by Gauteng is the definition of the word wire or wireless. They are raising a concern that there is wire and wireless is leading to confusion of interpretation, but it's not defined. So in terms of our interpretation is that maybe wireless may be so much used, but wire maybe not so much. They may not be that common, but one can argue they are also form of dictionary type of words. We hear a lot about wireless. And in that case, in terms of law, it's not only necessary to define. However, we also noted that the treaties, the main treaties like your WIPO Performance and Programs Treaty, WIPO Copyright Treaty, the Beijing Treaty, they don't define them. They use the word repeatedly, but they don't define it. So it won't be an anomaly for us not to define it. So our recommendation is that we leave it as is, don't define it, in line with other practices, and also in the context of the fact that wireless is one of the commonly used words, and it's linked to outputs like Wi-Fi and wireless transmission and so on. So we recommend that it not be defined at this stage. And then moving to slide 13, I'm going to be a bit faster on this one, is about the royalties. There was a general concern that the one-size-fits-all approach by the bills on the royalties, that we did not recognize as a on this bill, the other sectors, the other groups of industries are affected by copyright. And so we noted that it was in terms of royalties, and we also view that maybe there is a way that concern can be addressed. It was never the intention of the legislation to make a common approach to different sectors. So one of the possible approaches would be to include equitable remuneration, because of the fact that in equitable remuneration there seems to be a general understanding by industry that it can be used anyhow, where you can look at different types of payment methods, whether it's advances, lump sum payments, and so on. So it can be used in terms of the different remunerations, just to note the concern of the one size at this all, but this was never really the intent. We thought as to build the draft set and redraft it, they address the differences, especially for literary, musical works, audiovisual works, but in terms of remuneration, if there's a need for that kind of distinction, it's something that can be recommended and is being recommended. So, advocates spoke to kind of slide 14 on the suggestion that certain provisions of royalties and 8A must not have the role of the collecting societies and the tribunal. And we agree with that recommendation that we do need collecting societies to facilitate the royalties of performers and owners, and also the tribunal for any disputes that can occur in the process. So we think that we should retain the collecting societies and we should retain the tribunal as part of strengthening the protection on this work. And the other concern raised also about the choice between the use of profits or revenue when it comes to royalties. And while we note the motivation for revenue, we also view that profit, as has been provided for in the bill, suffices. And we also think that there has not been, within the public participation process in Parliament, it has not been an issue that was raised as a concern. It formed part of the deliberations, and we recommend that at this stage we retain profit vis-a-vis that of revenue. And there was a concern raised from the Western Cape on the retail royalty right to say that it doesn't provide for other circumstances, exceptional circumstances. For example, where the seller is the author, especially where we are saying that the seller and the art market professional are jointly liable for royalties. So what happens when it's the author and it's not the author is the same, it's the same as the seller. And what our response is to that is that while we note different exceptions, the law cannot legislate for every exception. There will be those situations, and that we also think they can be addressed in an agreement, and the agreement can be drawn up in those specific circumstances. And that in that case, then the art market professional will be the one that deals with the issues of the royalties. And furthermore, we also view that adding a substantive new amendment at this stage might be of a concern, and that should be something that maybe can be looked at in future. But for now, we think that as the provision stands, it suffices. That is in section 7, section 7B that deals with the retail royalty rights. And I think I'll talk to this slide when it comes to the area of the regulations, where many provinces were speaking to the powers of the minister to regulate and to prescribe on royalty rates when it comes to royalties. So this one will be dealt with when I talk to that slide on the regulations. So slide 17, on section 8A, there were several provinces that were concerned that section 8A should not be in the Copyright Act because it deals with audiovisual works and royalties of audiovisual works, that it should be part of the Performance Protection Act, and that it should be deleted from the Copyright Act. Our brief response to that is that the two bills are interlinked in terms of their structure, not only in terms of how they're drafted, they are interlinked. And also by having the link between the two provides more protection, especially for the performers, because the copyright amendment bill it will be talking to the collecting societies and the tribunal, which are measures that are not in the performance protection amendment bill. So the fact that they are linked together, it means that certain protections, certain rights will be provided for performers in the copyright amendment bill. And also, just to add, in terms of global practices, there are many legislation where both are in one law. So it's not an anomaly that is in the South African context. It's a global practice. There are countries where they talk to copyright and performance, neighboring rights in the same legislation. So slide 18. So we recommend that 8A, Section 8A be retained in the Copyright Amendment Bill. On slide 18, on the reporting requirements, this one is more of a clarity because many provinces were concerned that the reporting requirements that are in section 8A, dealing with audiovisual works, and section 9A, on the sound recording, are very extensive, they are very cumbersome, and they are draconian because they also come with penalties or offenses that are criminalized. This is just to clarify why. To the honourable members. In the previous parliament, this was extensively debated. When we had public hearings, performance came, access came to the committee, and they were saying that their performances are repeated, played on television, are played on different platforms, and they don't get royalties. And one of the challenges was the recording or the recorder of these works, meaning there are organizations that use these works for free, but then they make money from those. So there's commercial benefits made, however, there's no payment to these performers. Then the requirement was suggested that there should be a reporting that is placed in the legislation. In the music industry, they call a blockchain, that they should be searched. And where there's highlighted content in green, this is coming from the Copyright Review Commission report from the commission that said that there should be these log sheets, there should be these recorders because the abuse and the imbalance will continue in the country where music is played, audiovisual works is played, videos and so on, and people who are part of that process don't get rewarded, they don't get paid. So this is just to clarify the context of where these reporting requirements are coming from. And the major one was raised was the powers of the minister to on contract standards. Advocate spoke to that. I will not talk much on it. But then the point being made here is that this was also informed by research. There was the Copyright Review Commission also spoke to the need to have standard contracts requirements. To make sure that the contracts that are balanced and fair and they're not subject to much abuse. So the intention is to create an enabling environment between the parties that are contracting, the authors, the copyright owners, to ensure that there is that balance. Because currently, as indicated, there are challenges with the contractual relationships and the way that contracts are dealt with in our society. So we also noted some of the issues raised around the royalty rate, which talks to the other slide that I skipped. The recommendation is that on the other royalty rate, where the minister of which prescribed, we consider that maybe this is an area that might be left to the market, and that aspect where the minister can prescribe the rate for the royalty, other types of royalties that we don't have it in the legislation, but we can only have the retail royalty right that can be prescribed, and the right that has been the Bern Convention provides for it, and also recognizes the role that government can play in terms of these kind of considerations. But then the other rates of royalties we can take out in terms of the powers of the minister. But in terms of all the areas where we said minister can make can prescribe, especially in section 39, we think that on the contract there has been a history of abuse in contractual relationships between parties. It's all over it's well known, documented in media and so on. Many of the performance and authors, they struggle because of that. So we think that it needs serious consideration. And it doesn't mean that the minister will interfere, be involved in personal contracts. It's just to set the environment, an enabling environment in place, to have these standards in place. And parties can agree on them, but it's just to ensure that the environment is created. On fair use, Chair, the advocate spoke to it it's on slide 20 on the presentation. She spoke to it, and we can just say that a lot of consultation, a lot of research was done on fair use. And we think that so far we have not heard of a country that has been taken, for example, the WTO, World Trade Organization, for abuse in terms of trade because of status as a regime. And also we recognize that countries that have faced century rising, the US is one of the best examples in the world in terms of success and investment in the creative industry. And we note that even countries that are known as, for example, Commonwealth countries that have fair dealing systems, they seem to be now opening up their exceptions. And they look, some look at it like things, even though they don't call them things. So there is that move towards open exceptions in the world. And with this, it's important that we know the importance of exceptions of this nature for development, for access to knowledge, and for innovation. For example, an example that is widely used is of Trevor Noah to say that he would not be able to do what he does, but he uses lots of information and knowledge for the kind of work he does. That's creativity, that's innovation, and that is one of the areas that is used as an example to show that space is quite useful. So on this slide to the members, just indications of the how space works and how it's not the same as space dealing and the limitations of space and the fact that with space you can have a future-proof legislation that doesn't need to be amended continuously. For example, the US law is from 1976. Yeah, I think overall we are of the view that the policy should be retained. We noted the concerns of the provinces, and we think that it will do more good to the country despite the challenges and the concerns that may have negative implications. And in terms of the next slide 21, talking to some of the provisions that the recommendations made on section 12B to 12D, these are general exceptions, including for education, quotations, translations. The comments that we made is that there was a suggestion to have a licensing scheme that can go hand in hand with section 12D, because there's a concern that with section 12D, there is going to be a lot of abuse if there is no allowance made for licenses in when the educational materials are used. And our response to that is that we are of the view that this section 12D, for example, was extensively debated in Parliament, and it has got safeguards in terms of the usage and also like issues of fair practice is included. And that on the licensing scheme, because of the nature of the proposal, it may have other unintended consequences. And just putting it in the bill may in fact take away the intended benefits of that section of the education sector. It may create more challenges, and we need to maybe study it a little bit closely. And we think that it's something that can be considered in the next round of amendments in the education sector, and amendments in the bill. And then there was another proposal on section 12E, subsection 6, that the use of the word assignment, where the right to a work is assigned, maybe the use of the transfer of ownership in that same context is not a good use of that word. And we then looked at it and then we recommend that the suggested wording around transfer of ownership versus assignment, that the word ownership be recommended to remove. So it's more of a technical suggestion and amendment from the Northwest province. And there were certain suggestions and recommendations on the broadcasting ephemeral rights amendment in section 12B1 of section B. And the suggestion here was around the timeline to say that the reproduction of such work to a broadcaster, the process must be dealt with within 30 days. And this is from housing. So there's a procedure in the Act currently and now in the bill that outlines how certain types of broadcasting as exception has to be attended to. They call them ephemeral rights. They involve the broadcasting industry and also the music industry, because certain recordings tend to record it in a broadcast. So this procedure talks to how those broadcasting recordings should be dealt with in terms of time frame, currently 6 months, and how they should be stored and so on. And this was subject to extensive discussions in Parliament, and it was advertised, and we followed the Canadian model around it. However, many unintended consequences were identified, and there were challenges with even the terminologies used in the Canadian model versus the South African context. On the issue of the date, the timeline, the 30 days versus the 6 months, industry, some of the industry role players, including the broadcasters, one broadcaster wrote back to Parliament to indicate that if this is reduced to 30 days, there will be challenges for them. It will affect their operations. So it was advised that the bill be retained as it is. This is just to demonstrate that there was work done on this area and was considered. Then on section 12B, subsection 6, there was an issue raised around how works are distributed once they have been sold once, and the implications for the trading of that material. And this talks to parallel importation and the distribution of books. And the reason why this provision was included in the bill was to talk to the issue of the nature of the example of the type of model that is being recommended in the bill, which is an international method of exhaustion. The distributors and booksellers, they can choose from different markets in terms of how they can access books, which are very expensive in our context, public the pricing of books. And this will ensure that there's access to cheaper books and literature material, and also talking to the issue of lack of competition in this area. So this provision is very important, and we note that we know the comment that has been made, and we think that at this stage we need to retain it in the bill, and it can be reduced further in future. The provision was considered. Yes, some people have raised concerns with it, but it has been extensively deliberated on in the previous processes. In terms of 12B, I will not talk much into it. There were many concerns raised about section 12B in terms of the deprivation that it will lead to, and also its alignment with the three-step test. The response from the department is that we are a developing country, and in terms of public policy, the aim is to transform the economy and to make knowledge accessible to as many people as possible. And this provision brings a balance in terms of the role of education and access to information and access to knowledge. And it has been it was one of the provisions re-advertised in the previous National Assembly process. There were lots of deliberations about it. And also, it also has got safeguards, including the factors that are talking to fair use. So we think that it will not cause any harm as anticipated. And we also view that it should be retained in the bill. And for section 93, that deals with libraries, museums, and archives, there was a concern raised from Northwest on the exception that it might be abused and misused for recreational purposes, because of the fact that one can come to a library and look at a video, full video, or a sound recording and music content. And that is seen as something that can have negative implications for the audiovisual sector and sound recording sector. So this is an educational provision. It's meant for teaching and purposes. It's not for commercial purposes. And also permission has to be sought prior to such usage.
And we think that it is got, it's an exception, it's not an exploitative kind of sub-provision. And we think that it should be retained. It was extensively debated on. There was concerns about it in terms of whether it has got commercial implications or not. So this is to ensure that there's access to education and learning and recognizing other methods of learning, such as your recordings, audiovisual work, videos, discs, and so on. And we think that it should be retained. Slide 25. On the private copy levy. This is, there were several submissions from provinces that raised this. Private copy levy is a system wherein when copies are made in libraries, personal copies, the system can assist in terms of rewarding the authors, copyright owners in terms of the usage of their content. It's a system, and we are of the view that this is a very substantive possible amendment. And introducing it will require proper assessment of institutional mechanism around it. It needs a lot of administration. And indications are that in some countries in Europe, they are still finding ways around this system. We still need to learn more about it. And the recommendation is that because it's a very new amendment proposed, and the fact that it's a new mechanic or a new system that requires further consideration, deliberation, consultation, even further research in our South African context. So it's recommended that it not be considered at this stage. So we recommend that we do not introduce private copy levy in this juncture of the legislation. Slide 26, on the collecting societies. There were several submissions made on the collecting societies. There was the input made about the processes, where the collecting societies can keep monies, when there are challenges with performance and where they need to create an infrastructure to deal with that, to say that there should be a fund included in the bill. And we also do that that can be an administrative process. It does not have to be regulated in the bill, but at least there's a framework created for collecting societies. And also on the blue highlights, there was a suggestion from Housing that the clause of the section 22C that it simply must simply read as that remittance of royalty is subject to a reasonable and valid agreement between the foreign CMO and the local one. And on that one, we are saying that we think that this is provided for in section 22C, especially in subsection 3. And this section recognizes the importance of an agreement between the collecting society. And we also are of the view that on the foreign collecting societies, the foreign collecting societies in South African societies can be informed by an agreement, and those arrangements are encouraged. But we don't think that we should be too prescriptive in terms of either the wording that is being suggested. And to also note that the CMO context is not a South African context. We deal with collecting societies, not collecting management organizations. And there was another suggestion that was made, and also to indicate that we do refer to reciprocal arrangement between collecting societies, and we also indicate that these are not relationships that are forced. Collecting societies should assess the other foreign collecting societies and see whether they have mutual arrangements and then have agreements. So we think the collecting society chapter is sufficient in terms of addressing the issues of collecting societies, their regulation, their establishment, accreditation, and we think other issues can be dealt with when parties engage one another. There was a recommendation on slide 27 to reword some issues when there is a suspension, cancellation of a collecting society. And in terms of the role of the commission and the tribunal around there. Our recommendation on this is that the work that has been suggested seems to be too prescriptive. And it's also suggesting how this cancellation suspension should be addressed.
We ourselves view that the process in the field is objective and independent and takes into account the relevant skills required. For example, it talks about people who are skilled, like business rescue practitioners, who have knowledge of administration, liquidation. So we also view that if members are given more rights in terms of trying to address the issues, there might be complications where that these skills that may not be easily managed. So we think that provisions have been well considered in terms of the nuances of these types of issues where they are dissolutions and cancellations. So we recommend that as it is in the bill, if it should be allowed to be implemented, and we think that it's an independent and transparent process as provided. On the 25 years reversion on slide 28, there were various concerns raised by the provinces on reversion clauses. Some were suggesting that it be deleted, that it's giving too much power to government or to the minister in terms of having this kind of reversion rights. And so we have presented the rationale in terms of the policy around the reversion clause in terms of what informed it. It came from the Copyright Review Commission process, which also recommended that there should be a clause like this. There is a clause like this in other laws, including the US, where certain rights in ritual or musical work can be, in our context, that is, can be reverted to the author after they've assigned their rights, and after 25 years, that right can be recuperated, can be given back to them. So there have been many instances in our country where authors have signed away their rights unaware, and then their work continue to make financial benefits, and the owner then retrieves or recoups their investment, and the author then is left out of that process. But the issue here is that after 25 years, they can have an opportunity to receive back their work, and they also scope for negotiations where necessary. So we also view that as provided in the bill. This is a very important amendment, and we note the concerns about it, but we think that it should be retained as it is. And perhaps consideration can be given on the regulations to say that maybe there could be allowance for regulations that can be provided for to strengthen areas that might not be too clear for the public. And then there was on the blue content there was a comment that was made that was suggesting that the section dealing with this reversion right is introduced with the federal tool, and that this is an error. And our view of the provision is that the two sections are separate sections, there are different sections, and that one is not introduced by the other. It's not introduced by the other. The Schedule 2 addresses licenses, the different licenses, and we think that there is no confusion about the way that provision is drafted in terms of Schedule 2. And another issue that was raised was that maybe instead of having a reversion right, we should have a contract, and that the contract should do away with the reversion right. And we are also view that this provision should be retained because it serves a particular policy objective. And of course, it talks to a political, but we think that as it stands, it should be retained as it is because of the significance of this kind of this system. And there was a comment from Caltrain that said that there should be a clear indication that the reversion does not apply to the hereditary assignment given to a regulated CMO. And we are of the view that on the hereditary assignment and the CMO, the concepts are not, for example, even in the hereditary assignment in the Copyright Act, and also the content of the CMO, the foreign practice or institutional arrangement. So we don't think that amendment is something that we can look into at this stage, but we noted it, but it seems to be from a foreign jurisdiction perspective than our context. On the commission words, there were certain amendments proposed in terms of the wording, and I'll just talk to the amendment proposal, not the policy behind the amendment around our commission words. And just to say that the suggestion that was made was very substantive. It looked at replacing the agreement that is provided for in that provision and linking it to the different royalty provisions. We also think that it's a very substantive amendment, and the way that it was motivated was not very clear in terms of the main rationale behind it. And we also view that the provisions of commission work can be retained as they are, and that this kind of put that substantive amendment requires proper consideration and assessment. On slide 30 is provisions related to the open works. There were several suggestions, amendments proposed on open works. And this is just to clarify that open works is. And we think that as it is now in the bill, even though it's a substantive requirement, it is not that different from what is provided for in the UK, which is what we modeled it against. We think that it's a necessary process to ensure that the copyright works that cannot be identified or located can be found. We think that open works provisions, subsection 22A is retained in the bill. And there was a suggestion that it does not apply to musical works. We are obviously thinking that it does, that such works can also not be located or certain performance or authors not identified. So we think that there is.
Sir, I'm sorry, I did the same to you last time you were presenting on the public hearing, when you responded to the public hearing. I see that we're going towards 12:30. I was going to suggest that on the copyright amendment page, if you can just focus maybe on the areas that you differ with the other page. And then you then jump to performance protection hearing on that, maybe areas that you think about this type of thing. So that we have enough time for questions for clarity.
But it also doesn't help. Now, I'm going forward. You raise valid points. It just isn't yet ignored. And then we see it played out exactly as we said it would play out.
No, the other option would be to let it continue. And then on the 6th, we reschedule another meeting. We have a meeting with tourism. Sorry. Start at 9 on the 18th. We start with the engagement, and then after that, then we deal with the tourism. So that's another option. If members are free, honorable members.
I think that option will work.
Okay.
I'm not saying
The thing is actually we also in the past you remember or not remember that we used to refer to the office of the chief whip and the office of the chairperson that chairperson that will be given the warning from 10 to 5 because of the nature of the 2 years. But it's impossible now because we have the budget for debates. So we could not even try to request for more time. So we tried to split everything in this fixed time 10 to 1. So let's agree then that we will attend to the things and have a better debate on the issue. Another question.
Thank you very much, Chair. We now realize that from 10 to 1 it was sufficient time. Can we not make the meetings earlier? 9 o'clock? Or 8 o'clock? Because it's a very important, these votes are important, and we need sufficient time.
Can we agree on 8 o'clock?
I'm happy.
6 o'clock in the morning because the traffic's very loaded. if you say 9 o'clock, you have to leave City Council at 7 anyway to get.
No, there are other meetings in the morning. The Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence. Okay. And also the SWIFT meeting. So let's agree that we'll start at 9 next week on the 6th. And this first one.
Oh,
no. Are you scared to get up? And then I won't even be here. I told you, remember. I told you earlier. So I will be able to connect this with this first one. So that's going to check out. We'll issue the link to the provinces as well. Sorry, Doc, you can continue until 1.
Sorry for what you did.
Okay,
well,
noted, thank you. I was trying to explain because it's important, given the substantive comments that were made on the issue. The next slide is slide 31 on the copyright tribunal. There were several comments made by provinces on the tribunal, and I think that most of them they were more about the performance must have their own tribunal, for example. That certain types of sectors should be provided for, like your creative cultural industry, and that the nature of the people who sit in the tribunal, your judges and other experts, there should be consideration for other types of experts to look at the work of the tribunal. And so there were various range of issues that we raised. And also in terms of certain amendments that you suggested in terms of the role of the tribunal.
where they are certain powers that they can, they'll be prescribed for the tribunal. So in terms of our response to those issues, we clarify that the tribunal is meant to support both performers and authors on the broader structure that deals with various issues. And we are of the view that this will provide a cost-effective measure to address issues on the legislation. It was also recognized by the Copyright Review Commission that also suggested that there should be a bigger tribunal. There is currently a tribunal that is limited in scope of what it does. So this is not a new institution, but it will be bigger in terms of the scope of mandate. And this is just to strengthen it. But we are also of the view for the amendments that you suggested on how the tribunal should be addressed. We think that some of the scope of the actual day-to-day, how they will be dealing with the issues, should be left to their discretion. And we also think on the comments where there were concerns about them imposing fines, we also view that the tribunal should be allowed to impose fines. And that it's not unique, it will not be unique to the tribunal. Other tribunals do impose fines, and they are empowered to deal with disputes in that manner. And there were concerns in different provinces on the online infringement, piracy of online infringement, was slighted too. And some were concerned that there would be consequences of online piracy, and that there should be measures introduced to deal with piracy. Others were not sure about what the legislation provides in terms of online provisions. And just to respond, just to say that currently there is piracy. Piracy is ongoing. It's an ongoing global challenge in the South African context too. And it's not, there are those who link piracy to the bill, but the bills are not yet legislation. But there is piracy as we speak now. Books are being circulated online, music is being circulated, so it's a broader, bigger problem, and not necessarily a copyright legislation problem only. So with the digital world that has been evolving, we know that. And then in terms of what the bill will be providing, we think that we don't need a specific provision currently that talks to piracy as an issue. There are measures that the bills have brought in, for example, the technological protection measures, and then also the technological management information measures, which deal with some of the issues. And also there was a digital offense mechanism added in the bill to deal with issues of related to the circulation of work in digital platforms when they are made available to the public. So we think that the bill as it is starting to have a balance in terms of dealing with some of these issues of the digital space and the measures that are in place. So we think that for now what has been provided in the bill on the digital space is quite sufficient. And we also recognize the other laws that deal with the issues of piracy, like the Counterfeit Goods Act. All those might be limited in terms of its scope, but it also deals with counterfeit issues of piracy, and also the Cyber Crimes Act that was recently passed in 2020. Statutory damages were recommended to say when you have failures, there should be statutory damages added to the legislation, at least to balance the losses that are anticipated. We think that from our side, we note that recommendation has been made extensively in Parliament as well. And we think that given the format of the remedy of the territory damages, it requires further assessment even with the current judicial system in the country, and it requires a new process of consultation. We think that it should not be considered at this stage. And the Section 24 of the Act currently that has got certain civil remedies, it looks at Section 24 also talks to some of the things that can be provided in terms of infringement, and we think that it does make a difference in terms of what it has in the legislation. So we think that
to some extent, that Section 24 deals with some of the remedies, and I've quoted someone there just because I took some of their content as is, but we are in agreement with the content there, looking at the different remedies in the legislation. Social media platforms. Many stakeholders in the provinces were concerned about social media platforms to say that with social media platforms, the Act is not covering for that. I mean, the bill is not covering for that. And our view is that we are not recommending a separate process for social media. We think that the protections that are provided for the bill are sufficient. And we also are concerned that if we put provisions for social media, the law may need to be updated on an ongoing basis because of the fact that this is a very fast-paced moving environment. So we think that what is provided for in the bill in terms of contracts, clarity of royalties, dispute resolution, and the collective society, these transcend provisions will assist with how to engage with the social media platforms. And we think that if there is a need based on the changes, we will review and reconsider this in the future. But as for now, we think that it's sufficiently covered. And then on the slide 35 in offenses and penalties, there were certain concerns raised about what the digital offenses, that they are only applicable to when certain acts are for commercial purposes. And just to clarify that that's not the case, because that was amended. Certain actions taken, if you circulate someone's book without permission, and that is done in a digital way, make it available. If you do that knowingly, and the act is an infringement, there could be consequences for that. So we have strengthened that. There were concerns that it's a very strong amendment, but it's meant to deter issues related to piracy. So that has been addressed. It's not just for commercial, it's also for non-commercial purposes when it's done and it's affecting the rights of the authors and the copyright owners. And we think that because of the seriousness of online infringement, there should be such allowances made in terms of strengthening provision like that provision. And also related to other concerns that we raised, that some of the provisions in the bill are very strong, and criminalization, and it talks to the issue of the civil remedies versus the criminal remedies. I won't talk much into it because the advocate spoke to it, but the issues of doing certain acts knowingly or with the intent to cause infringement versus when you don't have a similar intent. However, we think that the criminal penalties that are in the bill are very sufficient, and yes, some have dubbed them as draconian. However, because of the seriousness of online enforcement issues, the seriousness of the harm this causes, it's important that we have stronger penalties. And these are the debates that we engaged with in the parliamentary process to ensure that there is that protection. And also globally, there have been discussions where South Africa was seen as not having sufficient enforcement measures when it comes to online platforms or when it comes to infringement of IP, intellectual property. And we think that this will also send a message globally that we do look into this issue and we care about intellectual property protection. And on the regulations, the previous points about the one size fits all, they have been noted, and also the powers of the minister to prescribe royalties, where we recommended that the royalty rate, we can remove that in the bill. Minister has not to prescribe that, he can maybe only prescribe for the retail royalty rights. There was a suggestion that the bill must prescribe that consultations will be for 60 days instead of 30 days. Currently in legislation and also with the processes in regulations, consultations are for 30 days as standard practice. And some will use 21 days, but 30 days is mainly the scope, is mainly 30 days. So we normally would gazette for 45 days, depending on the substantiveness of an issue. At times, the public will request extensions, We don't think that, although we note the recommendation, we don't think it should be legislated. 30 days would be the minimum. They can be extended depending on the substantiveness of the issue. So we think that we don't need to incorporate this debate in the bill. On unenforceable contracts, there was a proposal that instead of this provision being active automatically, there should be a process that must be undertaken through the tribunal. And we are of the view that the protection that is given by the unenforceable contract as additional contract for authors and performers, we think that is very important that we retain it. When the rights that are in the act are violated, then the contract becomes unenforceable, and that we think is a fair proposition. We note the wording that was provided, but we think that it should not be added in the bill. We recommend that section 39B be retained in the bill. And there was a comment, I think I already responded to this one, on the schedule, where I was saying that there was that clarity provided, or there was an issue raised that there's an error, and that one section introduces the other. So in that regard, it's just to clarify that these are two separate processes, the separate sections, one referencing the other, and talking to different licenses. So I think that was one address. Artificial intelligence, there was a section on artificial intelligence on slide 39 that we should have artificial intelligence introduced in the bill. We note the progressive recommendation and suggestion on artificial intelligence, but we think that there is not much we know about it in terms of the copyright regime and legislation. It will be a completely new amendment that requires further consultation and engagement. So we recommend that it not be included in the state of the legislation and the changes. The next slide talks to the additional the additional new amendments that are being proposed in section 24, and also in the internet service providers. They are suggesting that we define certain wording like information service providers and include provision of connection, the operation of facilities for information systems. And also there's a new suggested amendment on automated takedown by internet service providers. These are new amendments. We recommend that they not be taken into account in this process. They require a new, fresh process of research consultation. And on the computer software interface specifications, which are in interfaces of software or processes that are used and they form part of computer programs, we look at them from a context of they are not part of copyright, they don't have copyright protection. They can be used, for example, as part of procedures and processes to support a particular product. And we also view that we can review this in future in terms of it as a right of copyright. But as it is, it is similar to your ideas. The scope of copyright, we don't have copyright attached to them. So we think as it is for now, it suffices, but it's something that we can review for future possible amendments. Slide 41, it's just clarity on the duration of copyright that is suggested to be 50 years instead of 75 years. 75 instead of 50 years, currently 50. And also to clarify public domain, and we think that the most of the activities that are in the bill and also the rights that are provided are related to the public domain, how you engage in engagement and the parties and relationships in terms of the different provisions. So we think we've noted those comments, but we don't think that there should be anything added to them. There was a comment about the digital rights management that they must be strengthened in the act, in the bill, similar to the online discussion. We do have different measures for online digital rights. We know that their concerns are not enough, but we think that the bill sufficiently covers for that. On slide 43, the powers and the enforcement powers of the commission. There was a suggestion that the commission should be removed from the bill in terms of the enforcement powers. we think that we need an enforcement arm to address issues of the bills and the companies, because of some of them are juristic persons. It's important that we have this role in the bill. It should not be removed. So we think that it should be retained. I'm not going to talk much on the transitional on 44 because the advocate spoke to that. But we support that the bill it can be operationalized in phases, and that the issues of the persons of disabilities must be dealt with immediately, meaning they should be, the minute the act comes into effect, they should be kicked in. But we can assess different sections like political society, the tribunal in terms of regulations and so on. On the investment, we have been the first to talk to that part, that there is a concern that this will affect investment in provinces, the bill. And we noted the different arguments around that, about job losses, disinvestment, authors will stop writing. We note all of them, but we also argue that we need to create a balanced environment in terms of rights. And we also are saying that we are not able to predict the impact in the provinces at this stage. But we also know that as much as there are always issues and concerns, the contrary can also happen. And an example is the year in terms of how they have been doing in terms of the issues and the successes in the same industry. On performance, I'm going to move quickly to performance check. I think on the performance check, I won't go into much detail. There was an issue around the extras that was raised in terms of the definition of performer. And I will touch base on that. In terms of the other areas, it's mainly clarities more than suggestions for amendments. It's mainly clarities. But I'll just talk to that maybe another 1 point before I stop. On the extras, we think that we should include extras in the definition of performer, because even in the treaty, they don't exclude them. They don't add or exclude them. So it's not a common practice. However, we've noted that many key stakeholders have been calling for extras to be included in the definition. And for that reason, we don't think it can harm the definition from our context to talk to extras somewhere in the definition. So for example, we can say a performer is 1 to 3 extra denser, and then excluding extras. We can add something like that. The drafters can assist with the language, but it's something that we recommend be done. We don't agree with it, but we think it's something that we can do because of the many concerns around it.
Don't require them
as
public
hearings.
Go on.
It doesn't, it's not a substantive amendment as far as the engagement we've had, even, but as we can. Yeah, it doesn't. It's a minor issue. We think we can assist with this one because they have been repeating. They have been repeated as a concept, but it's not in our view. It's not necessary, but it's okay. We can incorporate it. And there were certain amendments proposed on from the WPPT to say we are not aligning to it. I'm now in slide 51, and there's a proposal about nationality. Place of first fixation, then the competition criteria. So from our side, we think that this is a wrong convention. It isn't a wrong convention, but there is a document I saw where wrong convention was read into the WPPT. But in our context, we think that the rights of performance have been taken into account, the citizens' rights have been taken into account, given the way that the remuneration issues are dealt with. And even if it's maybe not in the it's not in the WPPT, why for performance and from program treaty, we think that the issues have been addressed because there's nothing stopping, although the performance protection law is a South African legislation, there's nothing stopping performance from engaging with other nationalities if they so deem fit to do so. But we also noted the concern. There were some few other similar comments around this, but I think there's a maybe conflation between the Rome Convention and the WPP, which we are aligning mostly with them. The laws are similar in nature, but there are some differences just here and there. And I think on the copyright amendment bill and the performance protection amendment bill alignment, if these issues have already been dealt with, the alignment between the two laws. And I think I'll stop there. Other issues are more clarity, like Labor Act and the Copyright Act and the comment for them, particular concern that labor issues are not being dealt with in any of the bills, but they're not that different. We can't be dealing with labor matters in the bills directly. So overall, the rest is more clarification than any proposed amendment. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, for the advocate Pananeve and Dr. Masoja, for the responses to the negotiating mandates from the provinces. Then we only have 6 minutes. I don't think maybe we should adjourn now. We have agreed with Mr. Mussum that the tourism meeting we will defer into the third Chinese. We worry that perhaps we might not have enough time if we have the engagement on the two bills that we have the meeting of tourism. We don't want to take that risk. So we decided to defer the meeting of tourism so that we have that to hold time from 9 to 1 for engagement on the two bills. With questions? No, we stop it now. We will give you the opportunity next week or the 6th. It will be virtually scheduled. So in the meantime, you can again go through the two presentations compared with your own submissions. Maybe other problems with that issue, and then prepare your presentation. So that goes for everybody else. If there are no further comments, I would like to thank all the honorable members for the until the 6th of